call this meeting of the Property Tax Division to order pursuant to Rule 10.01. The first order of business is that we need to take the roll call to determine who's present. Mr. Peterson, will you please take the roll?
Chair Joaquin?
Present.
Joaquin present. Vice Chair Gomez?
Gomez present.
Gomez present. Representative Hertas?
Present.
Hertas present. Representative Anderson?
Anderson present.
Anderson present. Representative Becker Finn?
Becker Finn present.
Becker Finn present. Representative Fisher?
Fisher present.
Fisher present. Representative Green?
Present.
Green present. Representative Hassan? Representative Hassan? Representative Herr? Representative Herr? Representative Marquardt?
Marquardt present.
Marquardt present. Representative Mortensen?
Mortensen present.
Mortensen present. Representative Plowski?
Plowski present.
Plowski present. Representative Torkelson?
Torkelson present.
Torkelson present. Representative Hassan? Representative Herr? Madam Chair, we have a quorum present.
Thank you, Mr. Peterson. I want to note that all the committee documents for today have been sent to members and are on the committee page on the House website. And also don't start a meeting with a mint in your mouth because it makes it hard to talk. The first item on the agenda is the approval of the minutes. Oh, sorry. When the hearing was posted, the public was provided with instructions on how to sign up to testify during the public portion of the bill hearings. And the first item on our agenda is the approval from the minutes from March 18th. Representative Marquardt, have you had a chance to review the minutes? Actually, how about Representative Hertas? Have you had a chance to review the minutes?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have, and I have moved to approve the minutes. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Hertas. Does anyone have any questions about those minutes? Seeing none, all those members, please unmute yourself. This will be a voice vote. All those in favor of approving the March 18th minutes, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, no. The motion's approved and the minutes are adopted. Members, as a reminder, there is a spreadsheet provided by fiscal staff in your packets that describes the revenue impact for all the bills we're hearing today, as well as the individual revenue notes with the bill. And once again, thank you for staff for putting that all together. The next item we have on our agenda is our first two bills we're going to hear together. It's House File 4226. We will have Vice Chair Gomez and Representative Agbaje present both their bills together. 4226 is Representative Agbaje, and then 4227 is Vice Chair Gomez's bill. So they'll present together and followed by testimony and questions. We'll move 4227 to be laid over after that. Just follow along, we'll be okay. So Vice Chair Gomez, would you like to move House File 4226 before the division?
Yes, please, Madam Chair, so moved.
Thank you, Representative Gomez. Representative Agbaje, I see that you also have an A1 amendment. Vice Chair Gomez, would you like to move the A1 amendment as well?
So moved, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Vice Chair Gomez. Representative Agbaje, please describe your A1 amendment.
So the A1 amendment updates the tables for the estimated charts to move from the November forecast to the February forecast.
Thank you, Representative Agbaje. With that, members, are there any questions on the A1 amendment? Seeing none, it'll be another voice vote. Members, please unmute yourself. All those in favor of adopting the A1 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, no. The motion prevails and the A1 amendment is adopted. Representative Agbaje, please present your bill.
Thank you so much, Madam Chair and members of the committee. This is my first time in property taxes, so I'm kind of excited. So House File 4226 expands the renter's credit to more Minnesotans. And it does this by increasing the income limitation for the credit from what's currently the income cap of $68,440 to $90,000. Renters with the household incomes in that range would be eligible for a maximum credit from $300 to $700. It also reduces copay percentages by 5 percentage points for renters with household incomes between $46,920 and $68,440. And finally, it increases the maximum refunds for renters with incomes between $60,630 to $68,440 by $60. So you would get a total refund of $670. The revenue estimates are in your packets, but just briefly, it's $28.4 million in FY23 and $29.2 million in FY24. So similar to homeowners, renters do pay property taxes. It's often a cost that's included in their rent. For low-income Minnesotans or Minnesotans on fixed income, the ability to keep up with increasing property taxes and thus increasing rents makes it hard to stay in their homes. This bill allows for more people to get a refund from their taxes to help ease those costs. More and more Minnesotans are renting because of the high cost of home ownership, and this bill gives an opportunity to help people stabilize the cost of housing. By increasing the income cap on the renter's credit, we can reach more Minnesotans. These are likely Minnesotans with young families, student loan debt, or those living with disabilities. And by increasing the income cap, we can begin to close the disparity between renters and homeowners. Both groups pay towards the same tax and should have the same opportunity for cost reduction. Additionally, this bill closes the disparity between homeowners and renters by supporting Minnesotans who rent and are paying property taxes through their rent but don't see that comparable refund. Renters are often told that they need to become homeowners to receive the benefits that homeowners do, but that's not always feasible for renters who may not be at a stage in their life where they can own a home or because of the lack of affordable homes. And renters should not have to suffer those additional costs from other barriers to home ownership. So with that, I will turn it over to Representative Gomez to talk about her addition to the renter's tax credit, and then we can stand for testimony and questions.
Thank you, Representative Akbaje. Representative Gomez, would you like to talk about 4227?
Yes, thank you so much, Madam Chair. Representative Akbaje did a great job of kind of providing some context around the property PTR for renters, or the renter's credit, as we call it. I just want to point out a couple of things. She alluded to this, but in her 4226 takes that income level at which the credit phases out up to $90,000. So it gets us, I don't know the number off the top of my head, I'm sorry, but if you are a homeowner, then the phase out isn't until around $120,000. I'm sure our chair knows exactly the number, but roughly that's what it is. So these two bills taken together, 4226 and 4227, are really designed to get at the kind of two places, or two of the places, where the PTR for renters and PTR for homeowners are not on equal footing. So 4226 deals with that income phase out, and 4227, which is the bill that I'm bringing forward today, deals with the maximum refund. So currently, the maximum refund that any renter could claim is $2,150, and that's for in the kind of lowest income renter. But a comparable homeowner would be eligible for a refund with that maxed out at $3,060. And so what this does is it just aligns that maximum state refund for renters with the maximum state refund for homeowners to get us closer to parity between renters and homeowners. As you can see in the revenue note, it's not a ton of money. It's 7 million. I mean, in tax committee, it's not a ton of money, like in any other committee, a very significant amount of money, but you know, it's 7 million in 24 and 7.3 in 25. It would help 16,000 more renters receive an increased refund. I want to also talk about, our chair spoke about the sort of levers that exist when she presented PTR for Homestead, which are the income limits, the maximum refund, and then the thresholds and the copays. And so Representative Akbaje and I have a bill that we've been working on with some advocates that cut the copays, especially for the lowest income renters. And so taken together, all of these efforts, which kind of mirror what Chair Joaquin did with her PTR for Homestead bill, really both expand the pool of people who are eligible and also provide, especially those lowest income renters, with a boost in their refund. So overall, our hope during this time, and you know, I do want to just give a shout to Representative Diane Loeffler, who is the chair of the Property Tax Committee, our dear colleague who passed away. And this was one of the things that she was most passionate about. She really felt that it was a matter of fairness and equity, and that renters and homeowners should be treated the same under the property tax refund scheme. And so we're trying to move in that direction with these efforts. Just finally, you know, I think that this is the time. I mean, I know that we're always talking about our budget surplus, and you know that we have this unique opportunity in these times when we do have a little bit of extra money or a lot of extra money on the bottom line to address some of these like structural inequities that exist in our policies and in our state government and in our tax code in this case. So, you know, this is the time to do it. I always just think it's important that we remember that the reason that we have this giant kind of unimaginable surplus is because of how well the highest income Minnesotans have done during the pandemic. The richest people in our country have made out like bandits during the last 24 months, when so many families have been struggling just to simply keep a roof over their head, you know, keep food on their family's table. Those kind of support systems is at an unprecedented level. And at the same time that we have lines of families at the food bank, we have lines of billionaires extracting literally $1 trillion from our economy in profits from the stock market. And so it's those highest income taxes that are really contributing most to this surplus that we have. And the right thing to do is to adjust some of these structural inequities so that we're putting lower income Minnesotans on an even playing field. So thank you so much for the chance to present these bills today, Madam Chair, and we're excited about what we can do for renters this year.
Thank you, Representative Gomez. And with that, I think we'll move on to testifiers. So here today to testify is, Representative Marquardt. Oh, you can wait, okay. Sorry, here today to testify is the Director of Minnesota Budget Project, Nan Madden. Ms. Madden, please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Nan Madden. I'm Director of the Minnesota Budget Project. Really pleased for the opportunity to testify today on these two bills regarding the renter's credit. And I want to thank Representative Ambaje and Representative Gomez for their leadership on this issue. All Minnesotans want safe and affordable homes for themselves and their families, but some Minnesotans who are earning lower wages or are on fixed income struggle to afford both the cost of housing and other basic necessities. Our property tax refund system is a powerful tool to put a limit on how much of a person or a family's budget can go towards paying property taxes, including the property taxes that renters have paid to their rents. And it reaches our workers, families, seniors, and people living with disabilities. The renter's credit is targeted based on income and prioritizes those for whom property taxes make up a larger share of their family budgets. I have provided a handout to the committee that shows the positive impact of the renter's credit in each Minnesota county. You'll see that 30% of the households who receive the renter's credit include senior citizens or people with severe disabilities. And in 21 counties in greater Minnesota, at least half of the participating households include seniors or people with disabilities. I want to thank the bill authors for taking aim at the ways our current property tax refund system disadvantages renters compared to homeowners. As you heard, House File 4226 would increase the maximum income to qualify for renters to get that closer to where it is for homeowners. And 4227 equalizes the maximum refund amount for renters by setting it the same as homeowners. In combination with those important steps forward, I'd also encourage the committee to consider policy changes that increase the renter's credit for a broader number of renters, such as lowering the co-payments or other mechanisms, similar to what we discussed last week on the homeowner PTR. Expanding property tax refunds would provide a needed economic boost to many Minnesotans who have faced hardship during the pandemic and are still struggling in this unequal economic recovery. Our economy would also benefit as these Minnesotans spend their property tax refunds at their local businesses. Thanks so much for the opportunity to testify today.
Thank you, Ms. Ben. I want to note that Representative Hassan has joined us. Our next testifier is United Community Action Program Coordinator, Jonathan Marchand. Mr. Marchand, please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Jonathan Marchand. I am a program coordinator at United Community Action Partnership. We are a community action agency located in Willmar, Minnesota, in Kandy, Ohio County. We are an agency that serves 9 counties in west central and southern Minnesota. I'm the VITA site coordinator. VITA stands for Volunteer Income Tax Assistance Program. It's kind of one of the more shiny examples of how community action really puts communities into action, namely by training volunteers to prepare and file taxes without cost to the consumer for qualifying low-income families and individuals. The typical UCAP VITA consumer has an annual income of under $40,000. Can usually be a mixture of wages, Social Security, SSI, some cases maybe a modest stipend or retirement, like a para fund. For many of the seniors we help, the refund is essential to meeting their basic needs, and it's often only part of the only part of a refund that they may receive. Most Social Security incomes do not exceed $15,000 to $16,000. They're often sometimes less than $10,000 for a lot of our seniors who are fixed income and are renters. In many instances, the homes that seniors may own might be their only asset, but the vast majority of our seniors that we are working with that we are seeing this year are renters who are pursuing that rent credit. For low-income families who are renting, renter's rebate is often a part of a similar picture where they are trying to make household income stretch for their just meeting their basic family needs. Sometimes these families are paying upwards of 30 to 32, sometimes even 35% of their income towards their rent. So those refunds are really an essential part of their household family budget. And in some cases, we're looking at families that do have the dream of home ownership, and those refunds are part of that larger picture of moving on from being a family in a rental property to a family that actually owns their own home, increment by increment. So I hope that you'll prioritize the low-income renters, individuals, seniors, and families as you consider the best way to help our communities recover from the impact of COVID, as we touched on earlier. And thank you very much for the opportunity to testify today.
Thank you, Mr. Marchand. Mr. Dahl, please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony. Yes, Mr. Dahl.
Good afternoon, Chair Joachim and members of the committee. My name is Michael Dahl, and I'm the Public Policy Director with HomeLine. HomeLine provides free legal organizing, educational, and advocacy services so that tenants throughout Minnesota can solve their own rental housing problems. Our main program is a hotline that offers free confidential legal advice to tenants throughout Minnesota. We field over 1,500 calls each month. I'd like to thank you and Representative Gomez and Representative Baje for the opportunity to testify about the value of the renter's credit. We've heard from Minnesota renters, the renter's credit is a critical asset. The relief provided by the credit is urgently needed for people because people are already struggling just to afford their rent. As noted by a report by the Minnesota Housing Partnership, State of the States Housing 2021, in the last two decades, the median renter income has increased by only 1%, yet the median gross increase for rent is 14%. Renters cannot keep up. Additionally, affordable housing is very hard to come by. In Minnesota, there is a critical need for housing, particularly for extremely low-income renters. In fact, there's a gap of over 105,000 units needed for extremely low-income renters. As a result, 22% of all renter households who can find a home pay more than 50% of their income in rent. Because of this, renters are often made to choose between essential items and paying the rent. The renter's credit allows people to purchase things that they need. Recipients use the credit to buy essential items like school supplies, clothing, non-perishable foods, soap, cleaning and laundry supplies, and well, far in advance, even gifts for the holidays. They also use the renter's credit to pay for expensive necessities like insurance, license tabs, dental care, eyeglasses, and medication. Thank you for your time, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Dahl. I'd like to also note that our representative Herr has joined us. Our next testifier is Natalie Luderman. Ms. Luderman, please state your name for the record and proceed.
My name is Natalie Luderman, and I am a renter in St. Paul, Minnesota. I'm speaking with HomeLine for a higher renter's credit. I previously used HomeLine services as a tenant when I was having problems at my apartment, and they helped me immensely. I'd like to share how critical the rent credit is for my living situation. First, my budget is extremely tight. I can barely afford to live in my apartment and pay all my expenses on my salary. If I'm lucky, I might have $200 left over at the end of the month. Second, I desperately need to get car repairs done, which will cost me a minimum of $900. I can't do the repairs until I get my renter's credit back, which is just enough to cover the cost. I have anxiety that my car will break down because I have to drive to work 5 days a week, and I do have to work on site. If my car stops working, I have two options: an hour bus ride both ways, or $40 a day in Uber fees. I can't afford this monetarily, but I also can't afford to have an extra 8 hours of commute time to my work week. Additionally, the extra money can help me buy food since groceries have become so expensive. As someone who's experienced food insecurity, I have a genuine fear of not having enough money to pay for groceries in my budget. Finally, last year, my mom became suddenly sick and passed away not long after. I had helped pay for end-of-life care and final expenses, which emptied my small savings account that I had managed to accumulate. The unexpected cost of this care burdened me financially. An increase in the renter's credit would make a life-changing difference for my stability at home and my mental health. I want to thank all of you sincerely for your time and for listening to my statement.
Thank you, Ms. Luderman, and I'm so sorry for your loss. Members, I think that's it for testifiers. Do folks have any questions for Representative Agbaje, Vice Chair Gomez, or any of the testifiers? Representative Marquardt.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Agbaje and Representative Gomez, for bringing this forward. I mean, as the testifier so effectively stated, I mean, these are important dollars that are used to offset property taxes. This is what that does, offsets property taxes. And I've looked back over the last 20 years, and the biggest increase on property taxes, on kind of the major types of property, are apartments. They've gone up to 216%, homeowners 160%, and businesses about 90% over that 20 years. And those increases in property taxes are passed on to the renters. And, you know, I haven't seen what is the final levy, but the proposed levies for payable 2022 that were passed was an increase of 4.5% in property taxes this year. So that hits renters on limited incomes. And I think anything we can do to make this easier for people to get, things that expand it to make it more valuable for folks is a move in the right direction. And I have to tell you, Ms. Madden and the Minnesota Council of Nonprofits, they put out a wonderful publication on who receives the renter's credit. And while we know that just because of numbers, a larger percent of that credit goes to the metro area, but as she said, in 20 of the counties, all rural counties, 50% or more of the renter's credit is received by senior citizens and those with disabilities. So it is a program that impacts directly and very importantly people from across the state, and even in many cases are most vulnerable. So again, Representative Igbaje and Representative Gomez, thanks for bringing this forward. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Marquardt. Representative Hertas.
I should unmute myself. Thank you, Madam Chair. I have had a good deal of correspondence with apartment owners. And the question that has been put to me is during the time of the eviction moratorium, many people that have contacted me about their tenants have stated that many of them are uncollectible, where they have not paid the rent. So my question really is with regard to some guardrails on this program and making sure that the dollars go to where they are supposed to be. The apartment owners have also suggested to me, in order to recover those losses of unpaid rents, that it's driving rents up to recover the losses that they have not been compensated for by executive order. So are there some guardrails in either of these pieces of legislation to make sure that people who didn't pay rent do not collect the renter's credit? I mean, that would seem like a reasonable policy.
Thank you, Representative Hertas. Well, one, I think you have to have a certificate of rent paid to even file the form, and you get that from the landlord. But I will toss it over to one of our very capable representatives as well, Representative Agbaje or Gomez, who'd like to respond.
I think Representative Gomez wanted to go first. So,
Representative Gomez.
You actually, Madam Chair, you just said what I was going to say. So, you know, if you're a renter, you receive a certificate of rent paid. It's from your landlord. It is issued after the rent has been received. It's not like a prospective thing or anything. So I guess I can't really, I'm not sure if there's a scenario in which, I can't imagine a scenario in which a renter would be able to claim a renter's credit for rent that was not paid. The other piece of your inquiry, right, is about rent that was, that a landlord had to forego. And I don't think that there's a solution for that issue in this bill or these efforts, but.
I think I'll go to Representative Agbaje and then Mr. Williams.
Yeah, there's not much more to add to that. I think just on the other end of, you know, a solution for landlords who weren't able to collect the rent, I think we have a number of other bills that would address that, and I would hope we could gain support for that from members.
Mr. Williams.
Chair Joachim and Representative Hertas, I was just going to mention that the definition of rent constituting property taxes that's used in the formula for the credit is 17% of the gross rent actually paid in cash. So the only amounts that would be allowable for the credit are those reported to the tenant on the certificate of rent paid, and it would be for amounts actually paid in cash.
Representative Hertas, follow up.
Thank you, Matt. Thank you, Madam Chair. And, you know, I only asked the question because of some of the comments about the need to make this program easier and to make it more accessible. And I wanted to make sure that we didn't have such a thing where somebody just presents the lease that they signed as evidence of what their rent is. And I knew that certificates were having to been used in the past from the renters. But thank you, authors, your explanation of that. I just wanted to make sure that there wasn't some provision that was moving away from, or having a departure from that concern. Thank you.
Thank you. Members, any other questions or comments on either of these bills? With that, members, I believe I will lay over House File 4226 as amended. I'm going to go to final comments for Representative Agbaje first, then we'll lay it over, and then we'll go to final comments, motions on Representative Gomez's bill. So Representative Agbaje, final comments.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you to members of the committee. Thank you for those great questions. You know, I think as a lot of us have said, this is just something to make sure that renters are also able to partake in a system that they're paying into. And right now, for many of them, they don't get that opportunity. So by increasing this access to more people, I think we can help more Minnesotans continue to stabilize their housing costs and make sure that we're at parity between renters and homeowners. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Representative Akbaje. With that, I lay over House File 4226 as amended for possible inclusion in the Property Tax Division Report. With that, now Vice Chair Gomez, would you like to move House File 4227 before the committee?
Yes, please, Madam Chair. So moved.
Thank you, Vice Chair Gomez. Would you also like to move your A1 amendment?
I would.
Thank you. Please describe your amendment.
So, Representative, it's the same as Representative Agbaje's. It has to do with what the forecast that we're using. So update, it's just a technical tweak to update to the February forecast numbers.
Thank you, Representative Gomez. Members, any questions for Representative Gomez on her amendment? Seeing none, please unmute yourself for voice votes. All those in favor of adopting the amendment, A1 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. The motion prevails and the A1 amendment is adopted. Vice Chair Gomez, would you like final words on your bill?
I just want to thank you for hearing it, and thanks for letting us present together, even though it's kind of like logistically challenging. It made more sense. And I'm not sure where our chair Marquardt, he has these little nuggets. The one that's sticking with me is the apartments. The property tax increasing 216% over 20 years. Hopefully he'll share with us how he comes up with this stuff. But thank you so much, Madam Chair, and members of the committee for hearing this bill. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Representative Gomez. And yes, he does math very quickly in his head that I can never keep up with. So with that, I'll lay over House File 2227 as amended for possible inclusion in the property tax division report. And with that, I will now hand over the virtual gavel to Representative Hertas.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. And I was a trim carpenter for many years, so I brought my own gavel to this meeting since you invited me. So I didn't hear that. So the next item, members, on our agenda is Chair Youakim's House File 4082. Chair Youakim, would you like to move your file?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I would like to move 4082 before the committee.
Thank you, Chair Youakim, and I see you have no amendments, so you may present your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. As many of you know on this committee who have sat on a city council, been staff in a city or worked closely with your cities, tax increment financing is one of the few tools a fully developed city has in their toolbox to aid in redevelopment. Redevelopment allows a city that has little opportunity to grow or is fully developed to expand their tax base so that they can meet the needs of their residents. And in many cases, that expanded tax base allows them to lower property taxes burden for homeowners and businesses. Hopkins is one of those landlocked, fully developed cities. We're 2 by 2 miles just west of Minneapolis and just reached over 21,000 in population. We are over 60% rental and have a diversity of needs and a small but thriving Main Street. I spent 9 years on the city council, so I can speak from experience that Hopkins has used the tool of TIF efficiently, strategically, and very thoughtfully. We're here today to ask for an adjustment to a current TIF district that is due to expire in 7 years. The district was created to redevelop the site of a very old SuperValu headquarters. Its primary purpose was to remove the old warehouse that had been sitting empty for years and to develop the infrastructure around what has now become a newly developed office park. We are not asking to extend the duration of the TIF district or adjust its boundaries. We're just asking to make a few modest adjustments. Our ask is twofold. That portion for housing and blight correction is not restricted to the 20% for the 2019 adjustment made, but that it's adjusted to what the current TIF law is, 25%, and that the legal pooling amount that can be spent outside the district be increased from 25 to 30%. This would allow Hopkins to invest in environmental cleanup at a housing project that is in development, as well as make other investments in housing on a Main Street. This modest change to this TIF district will help Hopkins invest in those other projects without having to create one or two other TIF districts. With me today to testify is Kirsten Elverum, Director of Planning and Development for the City of Hopkins. I also have Stacy Killing, which I can never pronounce right, from Eilers and Associates to answer further detailed technical questions.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Ms. Elverum, please go ahead and state your name for the record, please.
Thank you, Chair and members of the committee. I'm Kirsten Elverum. I'm the Director of Planning and Development with the City of Hopkins. And as Chair Joachim outlined this issue, I think so comprehensively, I am not sure that I have much more that I would add at this point, other than I stand for any questions that you have on the importance of this to Hopkins, how we have used TIF in the past responsibly, and how we continue to value it as one of the few redevelopment tools we have to really help us with the cost of redevelopment, which is significant, especially today with rising construction costs, really making projects difficult to put together, and having the flexibility that this legislation would give us is really, really critical at this point to continue the successful growth that we've seen over the last few years. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Elverum. And members, if you have questions for Ms. Elverum, please indicate as such. And also, I believe Chair Joachim said another staff member from the city was available to maybe answer some questions. Representative Green, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If there's another testifier, let's let them go first. Maybe they'll answer my question before we get into the details.
Certainly. Chair Joachim, did your other testifier want to talk or just available for questions?
Mr. Chair, she's just here available for technical questions.
Go ahead, Mr. Green. Representative Green, excuse me.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's just a couple of questions for either the testifier or the author. You know, we see the TIF being expanded, and even in the bills today, in some cases expanded greatly. But in this case, I think, does this current TIF, is that on the 5 or 6 year limit?
You want to answer that, or do you want to defer to your city member?
Thank you, Representative Huertas. I think I'll defer to Ms. Elverum. I do know that it does have 7 years left on the district, but Ms. Elverum?
And I would suggest Stacy field the question, and maybe it could be repeated. I'm not sure that I understood the question.
Ms. Kvilvang, could you please state your name for the record and see if you can answer that question?
Thank you, Chair and legislators. In response to that question, this is not subject to the 5-year rule or the 6-year rule in which you're discussing. All the obligations were in place prior to that. This is really just allowing that under current law, cities can utilize up to 25% of the increment that's generated over the term of the district for pooling. And so this is just allowing them to do that rather than restricting it to 20%.
And thank you, Stacy, if you would just for the record state your name, please.
Yes, Chair. My name is Stacy Quilvang. I am with Ehlers and Associates, the city's TIF consultant.
Thank you very much, Stacy. Members, any other questions? Mr. Representative Green, you have a follow-up?
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair. The comment that I'm making is just what I've stated previously, that we continue to expand these, and it seems like there's no limit. And if this isn't, the comment was made, there's 7 years left on this. But then the way it sounded from the testifier, that maybe there was no limit. It's been is there a limit? Is this TIF scheduled to expire in the near future or distant future?
You, Representative Green, Ms. Grillang, do you want to take that? Chair Joachim, who would like to answer that?
Representative, Mr. Chair, I just wanted to make sure what Ms. Quilvang, sorry I demoted you, said is that this TIF was put in place before the 5 or 6 year rule. It doesn't apply. When I say it has 7 years left on the district is when it's created, you have that 5 or 6 year rule to do all the work within it, but then you use the rest of it to pay off the bonds. And we're not asking for an extension on the 7 years that is left, but maybe Ms. Quilvang can highlight or fill in where I left out.
Representative Green.
Just one more question then. It seems to be expanding, and I was trying to read through. There's a lot that goes into the TIF, but under certain conditions that the city can impose these, and they only have to come to the legislature if they want to ask for exemptions, as I understand it. Maybe that's not on all of them, but when you're expanding out again, now up to 30% outside of the district, when you're moving outside and you're getting into a different district, where is the carryover as far as the benefits to outside the district paying back the other district, if that makes sense? I know what I'm trying to say. I don't know if I'm explaining it right.
Chair Youakim.
Mr. Chair, Representative Green, I served on the city council for 9 years, and I still don't fully grasp all the TIF laws that we have, so don't feel bad. No, there's different rules for different types of districts. If I can remember right, this was a redevelopment district, which allows for use of excess pooling up to a certain percentage outside the district already, but then you have that certain amount that has to stay in and pay off the bonds. But we're not asking to expand the boundaries of the district or lengthen it. We're just making sure that we can actually access what's already under current law, because when it was given an exemption when the law was changed in 2019, it actually restricted it more than what current law said. But Ms. Kuelvang, maybe you could do a better job of explaining it than I just did.
Ms. Elbrum.
Thank you, Chair and legislators. Essentially, as Chair Youakim said, that we are looking just to increase the pooling from 25% to 30%. But again, that is the only expansion. And so it's really going to serve all of Hopkins. So they are utilizing this tool, as they already can under current law, that 25%, to do other projects that are redevelopment in nature so that they don't have to create new TIF districts in order to accomplish those. So the goal is to not have any more TIF districts, if that makes sense.
Representative Green.
Well, I'm not gonna beat it to death, but the point is that what I was trying to get at is you kind of are creating a new TIF district by putting more money outside of the district that you were originally set up. And so it might make more sense in some cases to create that new district. I understand from reading, it looks like if you can extend them, then you don't have to follow the new guidelines, and maybe that's why. But it just seems to me that you're stretching the one district thin by continuing to use an increased percentage outside the district where you originally created. But that's neither here nor there right now, I guess, but we'll keep going.
Thank you, Representative Green. Members, are there any other questions for the chair or for the testifiers? Okay, seeing none, Chair Youakim, do you have any final comments on your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, and thank you for your time today. This is a modest change to an existing TIF district that will help Hopkins make investments in upcoming and future housing projects without having to create another one or two TIF districts. I would appreciate your support.
Well, thank you, Chair Youakim. And with that, I'll lay over House File 4082 for possible inclusion in the Property Tax Division Report. And members, the next item on the agenda is going to be introduced by Chair Youakim. I bet you thought I wasn't going to give you the gavel back. With that,
there
you go.
No, Mr. Chair, I do trust you. So the next item on the agenda is House File 4392. Chair Marquardt, would you like to move House File 4392 before the division?
Madam Chair, I'll move 3493 before the division.
Thank you, Chair Marquardt. Representative Sandstad, welcome to the committee, and you may present your bill.
Madam Chair, thank you. My understanding, this is House File 4399.
Oh, I'm sorry. That is my fault. So, yes. Why don't we move backwards here, members, and I can get on the right page here. Representative Marquardt, would you like to move House File 4399 before the committee?
Madam Chair, I will move House File 4399.
Thank you, Representative Marquardt. I do not know what I was looking at. So, with that, Chair Marquardt moves House File 4399 before the committee. For discussion, Representative
Sandstein,
go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Good afternoon. Today I'm here to discuss House File 4399, This is a bill that would increase the annual base appropriation level for county program aid. CPA is the state's primary general purpose state aid distributed to counties to support the essential programs and services provided by county governments as part of the state local partnerships that help make Minnesota communities safe, vibrant, and resilient. CPA, or county program aid, is the county aid equivalent to LGA. Created in 2003, county program aid was intended to offset costs incurred to fulfill state mandates and reduce dependence on local property tax paid by homeowners, renters, small businesses, and others. Like many other general purpose state aid and programs, county program aid is not indexed to inflation, and periodic adjustments to the base appropriation are necessary to ensure counties have the resources they need to carry out the critical work we expect them to perform for Minnesotans, often at the state's direction. While there have been occasional increases to this account in the last two decades, it is clear that CPA appropriations have not kept pace with inflation. In just a moment, my testifiers will show that county program aid is at about the same level today as it was approximately 20 years ago. It is critical to note that while the aid has not kept pace, demands on counties and their programs have increased dramatically. Child protection costs and criminal justice expenditures are just a few examples. In these situations, counties, like our school districts, are forced to place a greater dependence on property tax levies. Before turning it over to my testifiers, I would like to address the fact that this bill has a blank appropriation. This was done intentionally with the understanding that the increase amount would ultimately need to be at a level that aligned with the division and tax committee's budget target. My advice to the committee would be to increase the appropriation to at least catch up with past inflation and population growth, and to allocate the increases evenly across the need and tax-based equalization components of the formula. Madam Chair, at this time, I can turn it over to my testifiers.
Thank you, Representative Sandsteed. Here to present, we have Matt Hilgart from the Association of Minnesota Counties. Mr. Hilgart, please state your name for the record and proceed.
Hello, Madam Chair. Hello, members of the committee. My name is Matt Hilgart, and I work for the Association of Minnesota Counties, an organization that represents all of Minnesota's 87 counties. And I am pretty technologically inept, so I just want to make sure that the screen is up there and visible to members and the public.
Yes, it is, Mr. Hilgart. Proceed.
Perfect. Thank you so much. Madam Chair and members, we do have a short presentation, about four slides today, that Mr. Mossman from MICA and myself will go through today. And I first want to just pause to thank Representative Sandsted for that wonderful opening and kind of introduction on what county program aid is. As Representative Sandsted mentioned, counties are an arm of the state, and we have a lot of mandates and a vast array of services that we do on behalf of the state. And I know members see this because they are on other committees aside from just property taxes. So they see our work in the areas of social services, housing, public health, corrections, business relief, elections, property tax administration, and more. And while we're often kind of seen as the invisible layer of local governments, I do think the last few years specifically have pointed out just how crucial counties are and how much the state relies on counties to help support Minnesotans, especially during the most trying times. I've already gone past my first slide, but as Representative Sandsted mentioned, there's really kind of, we see CPA as kind of a dual purpose, helping offset partial costs of those state mandates. I want to be clear that it is not a one-for-one replacement by any means, and then also supporting general property tax relief for all. The third point that members should keep in mind is that these aid programs are not annually adjusted for inflation, and we suspect that that is partly why we have gotten so out of whack with our 2002 levels and have not kept pace with those levels. At a high level, the aid formula is broken up in two categories. There's a need aid and there is a tax-based equalization aid. This need aid is about 45% of the CPA appropriation, and it's distributed based on three factors: a county's population that is over 65, their Part 1 crime, and their SNAP eligible household numbers. And what we find is that this need aid really doesn't fluctuate too much from any given year. Sometimes the only fluctuations are when counties might not report their Part 1 crimes on time. So we've seen one-offs where the county might lose a bit of their need aid because they forgot to report that, but not too frequently. The tax-based equalization side of the formula is the more complicated side of the formula. And this is the aid that is really supposed to identify property tax rich counties versus property tax poor counties. And really, the formula is set up, as you can see, it's pretty complicated. There are some population factors intermixed, but this is the side of the formula that was the most recently broken. And I want to pause here to just thank members of this committee, Madam Chair, yourself as well, Representative Torkelson, Representative Anderson, Pawlowski, and Representative Markworth. We had 35 authors in 2017 who worked to address this part of the formula. There were 27 counties that did not receive tax-based equalization aid because they were deemed too property tax rich, when that was really not the case. And so in 2017, we worked to adjust this formula to make sure that every county received a base floor and that they were guaranteed 95% of their prior year amount going forward. And that meant that all counties now receive tax-based equalization aid. And so I'll end my part of the presentation here, but I think the two takeaways are this. The current formula has the vote of confidence and support from all 87 counties. And counties really see the strength of this program as twofold. One, a recognition of the work we do on behalf of the state. And it is not a one-for-one funding, but it still is a recognition for all the mandates that we do and carry out. And two, is one of the most effective, if not the most effective, version of property tax relief in the local government aid formulas. And I say that because every single property taxpayer in the state of Minnesota benefits from county program aid. If you live in a city, if you live in a township, if you are paying school district taxes, any jurisdiction that you live in, you are receiving the benefits of CPA formula. And our commissioners will get to that testimony later on today. So with that, I will kick it over to Matt Mossman, who will be going over some good and fun charts here.
Well, thank you, Matt. Thank you, Chair Joachim. Matt Mossman, Executive Director of the Minnesota Intercounty Association. And I would just start and also thank Representative Sandsteed for her authoring of this legislation. And my role is going to be, as Matt said, to just provide some data points for the committee to keep in mind about county program aid levels and the trends in county program aids. As background, let me just say that it's important, I think, to understand that over 90% of the total revenues that are used by counties to fund the work that counties administer comes from two types of revenue, either the local property tax or state and federal funding. And also to further point out that that state and federal funding, again, and to underscore it, is not a windfall to county governments. It's reflective of the unique role that counties play in administering state determined programs. As you can see from the chart on the left, however, and has been alluded to, county program aid, as it has not kept pace with inflation, has also declined as a comparison to the total levy in the state. It's about half today of what it was in 2002, 20 years ago. 15.7% of levy plus aid came from the county program aid programs in 2002 compared to 7.3% today. On the right-hand side, you can see that general state aids to counties have been flat over those 20 years in nominal dollars, has been alluded to, from not keeping pace to inflation. And Matt, we can go on to the next chart where I'll spend a little bit more time. As counties program aid has not kept pace with inflation, what we put together on the left-hand side is just to show you how county program aid levels would have changed over the past 20 years had they kept pace with inflation and growth in population, which is at least to some extent indicative over time of expanding demand for programs and services as population grows. For the committee's context, the annual CPA appropriation would have been roughly $431 million today had it adjusted regularly for inflation. and would be quite a bit more, just over $500 million had it adjusted for inflation plus population growth. The other piece that I want to point out on the right-hand side, because I think it's a common question that would follow from recognizing those adjustments over time, and that is that property tax levy is now a much larger share as a result of total county revenues. I mentioned that they primarily the revenues to counties come from either those intergovernmental transfers or property taxes. But what you can see on the right-hand side is that the relationship between those two sources of revenues has virtually flipped in the past 20 years, where county revenues from property taxes have now climbed from about 35% to 45% to make up the difference for a general trend downward in intergovernmental aids. And that is both in county program aid, but also, as we'll note, in state support, oftentimes for the direct program funding for the mandates themselves. And with that, I would turn it over to a couple of county commissioners who we have to talk about what happens locally.
Thank you, Mr. Mousman. Our next testifier is Lucky Pyle County Commissioner Todd Patzer. Commissioner Patzer, please state your name for the record and proceed.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to be with you today. My name is Todd Patzer. I'm a county commissioner in Lafayette County, and I'm also the president of the Association of Minnesota Counties, an organization that represents all of Minnesota's 87 counties. I also want to thank Representative Sanchez for offering this provision and for the many members of the committee on their historic bipartisan support of the program. Keeping levies low for counties isn't as simple as not hiring or not building new buildings or not expanding a service. Counties are often referred to as our real estate, as Matt mentioned. That's because we're mandated to carry out numerous services under Affix State, no matter whether the state fully funds, partially funds, or neglects to fund a specific mandate. We must still carry out your orders. If the state cuts or reduces funding for a service, we must fund the whole with property tax dollars. County Program Aid is a critical resource to help alleviate some of those mandates and keep property taxes reasonable. There's never been a one-for-one replacement. This truly is an invisible layer of support that helps us manage what would otherwise be large property tax increases. Some examples from my county. In 2002, Lafayette County received $738,000 in County Program Aid, which comprised nearly 30% of our levy. In 2017, at the low point of our CPA, we received $126,000, which was just over 2% of our levy. Not coincidentally, those are the same years we saw our highest levy increases in 25 years. Today, our aid is back up to roughly $540,000, or maybe around 8% of our levy. We're thankful for the changes the legislature made years ago. As you can see, the dollars are still not near the prior levels, and that's not factoring in the ever-increasing inflation rates. As the current AMC president, I know how important this aid is to counties across the state. Just a few years ago, every single one of Minnesota's counties passed resolutions indicating the importance of county program aid as a tool for property tax and mandate relief. And their support of the current formula is written. You can imagine the power of all 87 counties, corner to corner, Kitson to Mower, Cook to Rock, Hennepin and Dakota. Large and small, agreeing that county program aid is a priority and benefits all counties and all property taxpayers. I also know from my travels across the state, conversations with other county commissioners at conferences and events, that our counties see county program aid as direct tax relief. That's not in question. For example, in my county, during our budget process, we do not use increases in county program aid as a rationale to increase spending. We estimate our expenses, project our non-tax revenues, and the difference is the levy that's needed to balance the budget. That levy is directly reduced, dollar for dollar, by our county program aid to determine the final levy that will be spread across the tax base. Without CPA, our 2021 property tax levy in Lafayette would have needed to increase by nearly 10%. With CPA, it was just 1.75%. And while CPA is probably not a term that is shared around the dinner tables across Minnesota, We do try to share the importance of this aid program with our taxpayers and residents every chance we get. As the state looks for opportunities to lessen the burden of property tax impacts on Minnesota households, particularly as we confront the prospect of rising interest rates, increased inflation, shifting market values, and other things across our state, counties ask that you look to this mechanism as a worthy investment. Thank you for your time and for the opportunity to speak. Madam Chair.
Thank you, Commissioner Patzer. Our next testifier is St. Louis County Commissioner Mike Yugovich. Commissioner Yugovich, please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Mike Yugovich. I am a St. Louis County Commissioner out of the 7th District in beautiful Hibbing right now, where we've got a bunch of snow. I know at least Representative Green was on my meeting this morning, and we all had the conversation, and apparently you missed all the fun weather. So getting to the point, thank you, Representative Sanson, for authoring the legislation and the committee for considering the House File 4399 today. St. Louis County budget, like all counties, is heavily influenced by the costs we incur to implement state mandates. And all too often, those state required programs are not fully funded by the state, or they don't meet the needs, leaving counties to fill in the gaps. Becomes very, very difficult. That leaves property taxpayers on the hook to pay those costs. And I'll give you a couple of examples because this is a tax committee. Minnesota is one of about 10 states that relies on counties to implement state-determined human and social services. For child protection, Minnesota ranks 49th out of 50th in the amount the state monies provided to administer the system. Consequently, a county property taxpayers must backfill what functionally should be a state responsibility. In the area of mental health, tax mandates and cost share requirements can result in counties unexpectedly having to pay thousands of dollars for a single individual that the state determines is no longer meeting the criteria for treatment in a state regional treatment center event when there is no suitable alternative bed or placement for the individual. So it's a problem. I think everyone understands that it's been going on for some time. These individuals deserve appropriate housing and services. Our concern is that counties not be stuck with the estimate $16 million in costs annually because of the underfunded state mental health system. Underfunded mandates are not just in human services. In St. Louis County and other counties, property tax dollars have increasingly been called upon to fund state and federal determined costs for corrections and probation supervision, to pay non-federal share of costs for ICWA out-of-home placements, to meet increasing state recycling goals, despite the flat state score grant amounts to pay for those programs. Those go beyond tax committee issues, and county program aid cannot solve all the program funding inadequacies, but county program aid is intended to help offset the growing administrative staff and infrastructure costs that also come along with county implementation of those state requirements. County aid program has lost ground to inflation, which is on the rise. House File 4399 would increase aid levels to catch up with past inflation and continue its important role of helping offset costs of implementing state programs. I want to thank everyone. Again, Representative Sanstead being a champion for us on this. Really appreciate the time from everyone today. It's a big deal for us. It makes a difference, and we appreciate any help we could get. Again, thank you so much. Any questions, I will do my best with.
Thank you, Commissioner Yugovich. With that, members, are there any questions for Representative Sanstead or any of her testifiers? Representative Green.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm going to make this quick because I have a feeling we're going to run out of time. Is there any figures out there that would say basically how much this is going to raise taxes in other areas if we do this program aid? Because it will. Even by the Minnesota Department of Revenue's own report here. Is there any numbers on that? And let me go to the first question first. And as was stated in the graph from AMC, that they would like it raised to $431 million if it's going to keep up with inflation. And that's up from $264. So the numbers basically probably are there, like $167 million is what I'm getting here. If I'm wrong on that, please let me know. And so the money has to come from somewhere. If we're going to be paying it out, it has to come in from somewhere. And it looks like it might come some of it in from people not having to pay or having lower deductions and end up paying higher income tax in other areas. And so has there been any figures on that?
I'm not sure who wants to take that. Mr. Hilgard.
I might actually, I'll take a stab, but I'll then also send it over to Mr. Mossman to explain the actual chart that I think Representative Green was referencing. Regarding who potentially might pay for this program, the last time that this program did see an increase in 2019, it was appropriated. It was a general fund appropriation. That's what's paying for the program right now out of the general fund. But Mr. Mossman, did you want to chat about the specific reference to the inflationary number?
Mr. Mossman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Green, just to, first of all, the number is a simple calculation. It's there for information for the committee. If the county program aid starting in 2002 would have increased annually by, and inflation has been relatively flat in many of those years, but had it grown by the rate of inflation, the 431 is where it would be at. So that's the calculation, and happy to provide those numbers offline as to how we arrived at that. I think related to that is that's the answer to question. Happy to provide more information if that would be helpful.
Representative Green, follow up.
Thanks, and I'll just make another comment. Thank you for that. I like those numbers. And how I came up with that is just the author of the bill had stated that the numbers that she may fill in on the blanks, on the dot, dot, dots, as we say, would like to be based on the inflation rate. And so when you came up with the numbers for the inflation rate, that's what I've got. And just to have people keep in mind, it's not that I'm against property tax relief. It's just that we do have to keep in mind that it's coming from somewhere. And so when you're going to give a break to some persons, others are going to pay. Thanks.
Thank you, Representative Green. Kind of tags on with the discussion that we talked about in taxes on Social Security exemption. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And to Commissioner Patzer, you've come a long ways in AMC since the last time we visited. So congratulations. It's been a while since we had a chance to visit. I support county program aid. Our counties do a lot of the work that the state mandates, and with what's happened the last few years, it's been an increasing load on our counties. So I support the county program aid. And I think they've done a good job in messaging that this is for property tax relief. This doesn't go for sculpture gardens or whatever else. This goes for property tax relief that all of the residents of our counties can take advantage of. So I want to thank the counties for their work. And again, I support the county program aid that goes out to all 87 of our counties here in Minnesota. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Anderson. Members, any other questions? Representative Marquardt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Not so much necessarily just on the county program aid, but piggybacking on what Representative Anderson just said, I want to thank the counties. You know, during the COVID-19 pandemic, we've relied on the counties a lot to distribute funding out to businesses and relief and all sorts of things to get those dollars quickly out to businesses and other people and so forth. And so, and we know there's a number of mandates that do go out to the counties too that we continue to push on. And one bill that's been introduced that's also has support of the counties is taking a look at how much, I think it's child protection services, are mandated to the counties. And I mean, my thought is that state funding should cover those mandates as best as we can, but because it winds up on property taxpayers. And I don't think it's fair necessarily that should be on local property taxpayers when it's kind of a statewide function. So anyway, thank you to the counties for all your work. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Chair Marquardt. Yes, the counties have they do a lot of work for us as a, for the state as the counties. They do a lot of work for us that we ask them to do. With that, Representative Sandstad, final comments.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, members, for hearing this bill. Thank you, Madam Chair, for hearing the bill. I too would like to echo my thanks to the counties for the tremendous work that they do. And I would just close by saying, as policymakers, we really do rely on county governments to administer a vast array of state-determined programs, programs that are essential to public safety, health, access to mental health and social services, the state's transportation network, parks, trails, environmental regulation, and so much more. Using a portion of this surplus to increase this general purpose aid will help to ensure that all counties have the resources that they need to keep providing those services while also helping moderate local property taxes. Thank you again, and I would appreciate your support on this bill.
Thank you, Representative Sandstad. I lay over House File 4399 for possible inclusion in a property tax division report. With that, the next item on our agenda is Representative Hansen's House File 4127. Chair Markert, would you like to move 4127 before the division?
Madam Chair, sorry, I had to get to my buttons here. What was the name of that bill again? 4137?
4127, yeah.
I will move House File 4127 for the committee.
Thank you, Representative Markert. With that, we have a House File 4127 before us. Representative Hansen, welcome to the committee. And it was nice seeing you in taxes today. Now we have you in the Property Tax Division. So please present your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, committee members. I appreciate you taking the time to hear about this issue that is very important to my local community. HF 4127 seeks to extend a previously approved TIF request from 8 years to 11 years and correct some boundaries so that the project can be finished. There's no change to pooling or the goals of the project itself, and this is supported by our local community, including by the City of Savage, who hopes to build an 8-acre park that the whole city can enjoy. And also by our local school district, who recently built a new elementary school near the property. Finalizing this project allows for additional housing to be built and for new families to join our very dense community. And with that, Madam Chair, I will turn it over to my testifiers. We have with us our esteemed city manager from the City of Savage, Brad Larson. And we also have with us Brian Weisberg, and I think Peter Coyle may or may not be here, but they are the subject matter experts on this project and can tell you a little bit more about it. Thank you.
Representative Hansen, would you like Brad Larson or Mr. Weisberg to go first?
I see they both have their cameras on. Would you, one of you like to go first, either one?
I have Mr. Brian Weisberg from Prior Lake Aggregates on my list first, so why don't we go to him? Mr. Weisberg, please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Chair Joachim and members of the committee. Excuse me, my name is Brian Weisberg, and I am an attorney working with PLA Inc. that was previously known as Prior Lake Aggregates, the owner of a 250-acre gravel pit in the City of Savage that is in the process of being reclaimed. In 2015, special legislation was enacted to authorize the City of Savage to create soil correction TIF districts that would benefit and aid in the reclamation of this gravel pit. The city, through that authority, created two districts. The first district has been nearly completed, and as Representative Hansen indicated, that reclaimed portion of the gravel pit now houses the newest elementary school serving the Prior Lake Savage School District and approximately 120 single family homes. The second TIF district is in the process of being reclaimed, and the amendment that is before you asks to extend two deadlines that were triggered by the initial certification of that second district. And there was some miscommunication as to the effective date of that certification, which started the clock, and our proposed amendment would extend those two deadlines by 3 years. The first deadline will authorize the city to change the boundaries of the TIF district within the project area, not to expand the TIF district project area at all, but to realign those to avoid property lots that would be split or contained within two districts and therefore ignored by the county in determining the amount of increment. The second one, as Representative Hansen indicated, would give us additional time to complete the in-district improvements. That those extensions would line up with our understanding of what the original timelines would have been. In closing, I think it's important to point out two things that the proposed amendment does not do. It does not extend the time period in which the increment can be collected for this particular district. That is not being extended by these two amendments. And then secondly, it does not authorize the city to create additional TIF districts, nor to increase the amount of TIF previously authorized. So the amendments are technical corrections in nature that authorize us to line up with our originally anticipated timeline. And I'd be happy to answer further questions if needed. Otherwise, I will turn the matter over to Brad Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Weisberger. And next testifier is Brad Larson from the City of Savage. Mr. Larson, please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Brad Larson. I'm the City Administrator for the City of Savage. Thank you for allowing me to voice our support of this bill, and thank you to Representative Hansen for carrying the bill. We support this bill for a couple reasons. First, PLA is not asking for more money or expanding the project area, as Mr. Weisberg has stated. The project scope remains the same. They're only asking to extend timelines to finish the project that the city originally approved. Secondly, we need this development to finish the local road network in this area. As Mr. Weisberg has stated, they've done phase one, phase two of the development. We need the development to finish because we have a planned road network that needs to be completed with the remaining phases of development. There's important accesses and exits that need to be built with the next couple phases. We also need the development to finish to make space for a park that we've been planning for literally the last several decades. As Representative Hansen has pointed out, this would not be a small neighborhood park. This would be a larger park that we had categorized as a community park, and we've been really looking forward to that. So the development has taken a little longer than expected, and that's just due to the complexity of a large project such as this, but I assure you that we have a good working relationship with the developer in the city, the school district, and especially the neighborhood. The folks that have already moved in would really like to see this development completed, and that's why we're supporting it. So that's all the information I have, and I would stand for questions.
Thank you, Mr. Larson. Members, do we have any questions for Representative Hansen or any of her testifiers? Seeing none, Representative Hansen, final word.
I have no other things to add to this, just a thank you. Thank you for hearing this, and thanks for helping my community finish this project. I appreciate you.
Thank you. With that, I lay over House. Thank you, Representative Hansen. With that, I lay over House File 4127 for possible inclusion in the Property Tax Division report. The next item on our agenda is House File 4297. Representative Marquardt, could you please move House File 4297 before the division?
Madam Chair, I will move House File 4297 before the division.
Thank you, Chair Marquardt. Representative Bernardi, I see that you also have an amendment. Chair Marquardt, would you like to move the DE3 amendment as well?
Madam Chair, I'll move the DE3 amendment.
Thank you, Representative Marquardt. Representative Bernardi, our nonpartisan staff, if you want to please describe the amendments, and then we can move to a vote.
Madam Chair, I'll have Mr. Cope explain it.
Mr. Cope.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Bernardi. So the DE3 exempts Fridley Tax Increment Financing District number 20 from the requirement that 90% of its increment be spent on light correction. and it allows the total amount of increment which is allowed to be spent outside of the district, which is 25% in the case of a redevelopment district or 35% in the case of a redevelopment district which made the 2D election, to be transferred to the Fridley Housing and Redevelopment Authority for use on housing programs which were adopted on or prior to December 31st of last year. This would require the City of Fridley to report on the use of that increment to the Office of the State Auditor and to report to the legislature on February in 2024 and 2026. And the authority to make these transfers would expire in December 31st of 2026.
Thank you, Mr. Cope. Members, does anybody have any questions on the DE3 amendment? Seeing none, please unmute yourself for a voice vote. All those in favor of adopting the DE3 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, say no. The motion prevails and the DE3 amendment is adopted. Representative Bernardi, could you please present your bill?
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's great to be before you and the members of this committee. House File 4297, as amended by the DE3, allows the City of Fridley to use excess tax increment from its TIF District Number 20 to help fund the city's current housing rehabilitation programs. As amended, this will give Fridley exception to the general TIF law, but only for those that mirror similar exceptions enacted last year for the cities such as Minnetonka, Richfield, and St. Louis Park. Fridley's aging housing stock needs serious rehab, and it's a challenge beyond the means of many of our residents. The city has responded with creative and aggressive programs for rehab loans and grants. There is compelling historical reason to allow this exception to general TIF law for this particular TIF district. Fridley District 20 is unique. It covers a cleaned up, notorious Superfund site that for decades plagued the city and hampered its growth and progress. It was one of the worst national Superfund sites, and people feared it would pollute the city's water supply. The site finally got cleaned up, but in the process, the city spent more than $4.5 million of its resources and $15 million in GO bonds as it worked to remediate the site along with the PCA, the EPA, and the polluters, including the U.S. Navy. During the cleanup, Fridley created TIF District Number 20 to assist the economic development once the site was pollution-free. Fortunately, it is now producing tax increment. And since this is a this very district that helped create problems for Fridley's growth since 1960s, and since the city's contributed significant resources to assist in the cleanup, it seems appropriate that the Fridley be allowed, at least for a time, to use excess increment to help solve its aging housing stock crisis. I urge you to support our effort. Thank you, Madam Chair. And with that, I would love to turn it over to Fridley Council Member Stephen Eggert, who will give you a count of the housing crisis we're facing in Fridley.
Thank you, Representative Bernardi. Council Member Eggert, please state your name for the record and proceed.
Good afternoon, Chair Uocum, and members of the committee. And I'm Stephen Eggert, a long-term resident living in Fridley since the early 60s. I've served on the HRA for 9 years, the Housing Redevelopment Authority, during the creation and development of this TIF district. And now I'm currently serving on the City Council. So I would say I'm a firsthand witness of the success of this TIF district and the community needs. The additional savings in this district, as Representative Bernardi mentioned, would be used to supplement our current housing programs across the entire city, for which the demand exceeds the supply of funds. We would certainly be very thankful for everything you can do to help Fridley with this bill. Fridley can spend every dollar that would come from this. I'll give you a couple of examples. Our senior loan program, which was put into place and very successful, has been sold out for this year already in February. We also have two mobile home parks with over 400 homes, many that are not roadworthy or in very poor condition. These represent some of the large amount of affordable housing we have in our community. I want to thank you for the time to speak and for your consideration. I wanted to be brief as our time is coming to an end here. I urge you to pass this bill, and I'm happy to answer any questions. I know that we have our attorney, Jim Casserly, who also can handle the details. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Councilmember Eggert. Mr. Casserly, did you want to testify, or are you just here to answer technical corrections or technical questions?
Madam Chair and members, I will only mention that the city, in fact, created most of the excess in this district by selling its own GO bonds. It had actually issued over $15 million worth of revenue notes and then took those notes out with bonds at half of the interest rate. So a great deal of the savings that are actually available now are a result of the city's action. The housing needs are extensive. It's an aging suburban city with changing demographics, and you know all of the issues that go on. So I don't really have anything more to say. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Casserly. Could you please formally state your name for the record?
It's James Casserly, Casserly. I'm a legal counsel for the Housing and Redevelopment Authority.
Thank you, Mr. Casserly. With that, members, are there any questions for Representative Bernardi? I've added a few more minutes onto our time today just to make sure if there's questions, we can ask them. Any questions? Seeing none, Representative Bernardi, final comments.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I really appreciate the committee's consideration for this important project. I forgot to mention that Fridley's median income is 62% of the metro area. And for many people in our community, the challenge is beyond the means of many of our residents to be able to rehab their homes and keep the aging Fridley housing stock up to par. And so these funds would help that, and anything we can do to help the residents of our community to be able to have a place to call home for their family and to help our community grow and be prosperous as we have come out of this, I don't know if you call it a Superfund crisis, but a very detrimental pollution that happened in our community. And I'm very proud of our community for all they've done to clean this up and to help our city prosper. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Bernardi. With that, I lay over House File 4297 as amended for possible inclusion in a property tax division report. Members, I just want to thank you for your work today, and I want to thank you for all the work we did together in a very short time this session. It is the plan of the chair to have the property tax division report posted no later than noon on Sunday. On Monday at 1 p.m., we will be meeting to hear the division report and take testimony. Then we will meet on Wednesday during our regular time to go over amendments and move the bill out of division. So members, it's that time of session when our nonpartisan staff and revisor's office are really working overtime. While division doesn't have an amendment deadline, I would please ask folks to be respectful of staff's time and try to get any amendments you'd like to them as quickly as possible. And then to Mr. Bennick by the end of the workday on Tuesday, March 29th. Representative Hurtaz, did you have anything to add or any questions about that timeline?
Sorry, I had to get my cursor to the screen to unmute. No, you've summed it up very well, and thank you for that flexibility with regard to any amendments.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Hurtaz. Members, does anybody else have any questions? Seeing none, with that, we are adjourned.